podcast family, just want to thank you for listening. It's good to see the numbers growing on a podcast, particularly on iTunes and Spotify. Thanks for your support. In this episode, I want to drop some LinkedIn marketing advice. I was interviewed by Levi Saunders from Digital Hitman, who specialize in search engine optimization. It's always good when a digital marketer interviews me. They could ask quite good questions. And I think if you're in marketing or you're an agency owner, you might find that this conversation hits a lot of points for you, maybe goes a little bit deeper and a bit more technical than some of the conversations, and explains what the differences are and the nuances between LinkedIn and, say, other social media platforms or even Google. So without further ado, we're going to go to my interview with Levi Saunders from Digital Hitman. Enjoy, subscribe, share the love, drop me a message on whatever platform you like to hang out on, and let me know your feedback. Peace.
Nat, obviously, this is a good one because I come from very much an SEO lead generation background. There are similarities, I guess, in terms of generating leads between SEO and LinkedIn. I guess one of the things that's different is the social element of LinkedIn. It's very different to, I guess, what you consider organic SEO. How does it all work? So, I mean, I'm starting from scratch really with my LinkedIn profile. I know that my ideal customer definitely lives in LinkedIn. They definitely live in search engines too, but in particular industries, it's a huge investment in time and money to find those customers. I do know they lived in LinkedIn. I also do know that there's a lot of other people to sift through on LinkedIn to find these guys. So for someone that's really starting from scratch with their LinkedIn profile, you know, what are the steps? So what's the first step that I've got to do from the ground up to really start initiating those conversations with, you know, I'm really targeting, I guess, medium business owners and beyond. You know, how do I find these people, these CEOs and business owners, or how do they find me on LinkedIn?
Yeah, great question. Well, LinkedIn has been growing faster and faster every year for the past 10 years. It's now 706 million members worldwide, and it's growing now at 3 members every single second. And the interesting thing is, people are spending 3 times as much time on the platform than they were 2 years ago. So it's becoming more of an engaged platform. When I started using LinkedIn, I was in sales, and I was actually working for an online marketing agency. So you'll relate to this because I was selling website development, SEO, Facebook marketing, everything under the sun. And I just moved back from Asia where I was working for a real estate agency. And I said to my employer, I said, who's the ideal client for an online marketing agency? And he said, look, the best clients are cosmetic surgeons. He goes, they got a lot of money. They always need new leads. And they don't know anything about marketing. And so being new to the industry, I went and knocked on every plastic surgeon's door in Melbourne. Then I tried cold calling them. And I just couldn't get past this thing called the practice manager, as you're probably aware. And
definitely.
I just signed up to LinkedIn and I contacted 10 surgeons. I got 6 responses and I had 4 meetings and I made 1 sale. But when we were doing the sales meeting at the end of the month, like all of the other sales guys for this agency were going, okay, I've made, you know, 8 sales and the average transaction size was maybe $1,200 or something. Whereas I just made 1 sale, but the transaction size was 25,000, you know, because it's so targeted. So, you know, the week after that, I sent 10 messages out, 10 connection requests out, and then I got 2 sales and just learned to scale that business very quickly. And when you've got something that's working like that, a lot of people will approach you and ask you to teach them how to do it. So it's important to understand that it was a networking tool to begin with, because a lot of the people that moved onto the platform in the last 3-4 years just see it as a social media site, you know, similar to Facebook. But you couldn't post content there originally. So to answer your question, how do you find, you know, potential opportunities and leads on LinkedIn? It's about like having your network, your existing network as connections, and then that gives you visibility over all your potential referral network. So if you've got 10 clients and you're connected to all of them, you can see, and they've got 10 clients, you can see all of their potential referral network.
Okay, so I guess what's appealing is that although it's a digital platform, it's a representation of how a referral system does and should work.
Exactly. So when I was selling real estate 12 years ago, 13 years ago in Thailand, somebody used to buy a property and I used to say, can you think of two or three people that might also be interested in buying a property in Thailand, to put their name down and their phone number? And I'd call them, and eventually sometimes I'd get a sale from it. But what I do now is, when a client's doing really well, I have a look at all his LinkedIn connections. I pick out two or three of the like ideal client, the right industry, that look like they'd be really a good client for me. And I say, hey, can you introduce me to these three people, rather than, you know, because I got complete visibility over their referral network.
Okay. Yeah. So let's just break that down for a bit. Sorry, I really interrupt sometimes. So you're finding these people, then you're finding the connections that you want as a second connection, and then you're asking to be introduced on LinkedIn. Is that right?
Yeah, but even if you didn't ask, and even if you just sent them a connection request, the fact that you've got those mutual connections is almost, it gives you a much higher chance of them accepting the connection request, especially if you mention the connection in common. And then if you niche, if you target surgeons or dentists or lawyers or financial services companies, what happens is, you've got like, you might end up having 1,000 connections in the financial services sector. So you can imagine, when you reach out to the next director of a financial services company, he sees, wow, this guy's connected to so many people in my industry. What am I missing out on? And then the conversion rates goes up again. So it's a networking tool. I think my sales experience served me really well in learning how to use it as a networking tool. But don't get me wrong, content's a big play on LinkedIn now, but I do think that it does start with the quality of your network, because the mistake that a lot of people make on LinkedIn is that when they want to spend time on LinkedIn, they go into all of their invitations that other people have sent them, and then they choose which ones they accept and which ones they don't. But they're being reactive. They're not like being proactive and saying, these are the people I want in my network. I'm going to go out and send them connection requests. And so, quite often they'll have a whole bunch of salespeople and recruiters that they're connected to because of that.
Gotcha.
You know?
Does that promote a problem as well with your LinkedIn platform? If for me, it's I get a lot of overseas web developers looking to connect with me. They obviously see who I am and what they do, and you know, offer some sort of. And everyone seems to be a CEO or a director of a web development company. Some of them, very rarely, I might say yes. But if I was continually saying yes to those connections, do you think that's going to steer my profile in the wrong direction?
Yeah. I mean, unless you want to partner with web agencies, you're going to have a diluted network. So, the ideal scenario is to, if you're targeting medium-sized business owners that are in Perth, is that as much as your network as possible will be falling into that category, so that when you post content, it's relevant to all of them, rather than, you know, the content being relevant to 10% of your network, for example.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So really content geared towards obviously the medium business owners, or even some of the small business owners in Perth that are my ideal client. Would you say that you have to be careful now? You know, it seems that a lot of people are really cluing up to how powerful LinkedIn can be. And I find that, you know, there seems to be a lot of smaller backyard operators in business that are using the platform to really spam people and try and get their business, or, you know, just playing a pure game of numbers where they're just messaging thousands of people. Is there some real do nots in terms of, I wouldn't say LinkedIn prospecting, but there's some absolute don'ts in LinkedIn connecting that we've got to be careful of?
Yeah, absolutely. LinkedIn want to give their members a good experience. So things like spam or manipulating the algorithm, or even, you know, doing the things on that sort of scale, you know, where they're blanketly just sending all these impersonal connection requests, well, it can end up in you being banned from LinkedIn. But I mean, it's not going to work in any event, because, you know, people are like you said, it's happening. It's very common. Spamming is not the way to do it. It's about building relationships. And what happens is, normally, is when they send that connection request, as soon as this person accepts, they start sending sales letters. And the secret to generating leads is, you don't sell to people until they have established a need for what they don't have the problem that you solve. You can't start selling to them. It's you got to ask them questions or get them on a call to find out information to see if they've got the problem you solved.
Yeah, 100%. There seems to be a lot of like phrases at the moment that I'm very mindful of when people speak to me on LinkedIn, like, it's so great to collaborate, like-minded individuals in the same industry, just wanting to know how we can work together. You know, maybe that stuff worked 5 years ago, but now it's just like red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag.
Kind of thing. But you are pretty switched on and compared to most LinkedIn members, because you're in the digital space. You know, there's a lot of
100%.
A lot of industries where that sort of stuff still works.
I think it'd be fair to say you can learn a lot about how people prospect you in terms of what works and what doesn't, gauging your own mood, I suppose, as well. I think it would be fair to say.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. For someone that maybe hasn't gone in the right direction on LinkedIn or hasn't paid too much attention, and perhaps the ratio of their connections isn't their target audience at all whatsoever, do you think these things are kind of reversible over time? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be reversible. I think the focus should be on growing your network with the right people, you know.
Gotcha, yep.
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you're, like, if you're connected with somebody and they never engage with you and you never message them and never contact them, the chances are you're not going to see their content. They're not going to see your content. It's about building a community of people that are engaged, that you are, in touch with, and that should be the focus rather than trying to remove people that are irrelevant. That's, can be a waste of time.
Being on the forefront. In terms of connecting with these people, do you think people go in for the kill too early? Do you think, people solely go on LinkedIn just to get a deal or sign a contract? That's probably not something that you'd teach, is it?
No, I do think going, it depends what you call the kill, but I do think you should go in direct and early, but I just think you should be looking for a conversation, not a sale. Pull the conversation offline, get them on the phone. You know, if I was messaging you, Levi, I'd just say, look, I've noticed you're in web marketing. I'm interested in finding out more about what you do to see if there's an opportunity for us to work together. Why don't we hop on a phone call over the next few days? So I don't know if you want LinkedIn marketing, because I haven't asked you any questions yet, so I can't start telling you all about my services. Yeah.
So it's fair to say that the source to the answers you want, I mean, you as a business owner want to arrive at an answer as soon as humanly possible to know whether, you're annoying this person or, they're potentially interested in something that you have to offer as well. So I think you can't really do that if you're not asking the right questions.
That's right. Yeah. And I think most businesses, to be honest, like, they're not at that stage yet where they've made that shift to niche down. You know, there's not many businesses that figured that out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, a lot of LinkedIn profiles, I think as a platform itself, across business leaders, it can be used very well. I think everyone's credentials are kind of up the front, like, whatever it is that they do, it's really in bells and lights or whatever. What are some key things to steer your profile in the right direction, which is going to ooze credibility? Some people are saying they're the Bitcoin trader, they're Forex, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
For me, that's kind of all red flag stuff that I tend to worry about. How do you kind of gear your profile towards being someone with authority, that has respect, that isn't, in business for a quick commission or, a 6-month period? This is a long-term goal. They're established. What are some things people have got to knock out before they start talking to people?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Is it the difference between things like LinkedIn and social media as opposed to, say, Google and websites, is they're higher up on the customer journey. They're in that awareness stage where they don't know if they're interested in Bitcoin, for example, so on your profile, it can't just be all about you. It's not about you. Like, people do want to know who you are, but it's about what they want. And if you can show the potential customer that you understand their problem, they will just automatically assume that you have the solution. So it's a bit about empathy. And it's also, I think, it comes from confidence. Like, I think the guys that are like going, I'm a Bitcoin trader, I'm the CEO of this, I'm the director, blah, 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 blah. Like, they're overselling themselves. And that sort of comes across as needy. Whereas if they said, look, I've found that traditional investment models are flawed because of this, this, and this, which leaves families not being able to retire on time. So I decided to, you know, help these families with alternative investments. Like, so you're telling people why you do what you do, but you're also like, they'll identify with that problem. And then maybe you can mention crypto, but then they'll understand it. But if you just go dive in with all that stuff at the start, you just smell like a salesperson, and you just don't want to smell like a salesperson at that stage of the customer journey.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's saying here, I'm reading statistics like, you know, Fortune 500 companies love LinkedIn as the most popular social media and the most popular one for companies to use. In terms of, you know, putting it up against something like Instagram, for example, you know, I know that you've got a few articles pro and against that. I think Instagram definitely has its place. It's got a huge visual element or whatever. I think LinkedIn is almost like the no bullshit approach social media for a business. You know, everyone's in there to network. Everyone's in there to hopefully grow, maintain, or, you know, increase something, whether it's the quality within their business. What are some things that, that really LinkedIn, I guess in a word, kind of stamp out that, that
Instagram does?
I mean, it seems to be a little bit more.
Imagine if you, in, on Instagram, you could choose who your followers were. They didn't choose you. You could choose them. Because on LinkedIn, you can, you connect with somebody, they're in your audience. So you can be way more decisive as to who sees your content. So I think that's a big one. And LinkedIn's way behind, you know, these other social platforms in terms of functionality. Like, LinkedIn influencers are just starting to take off. I think they're going to be huge over the next couple of years. I've started to get some brand deals, but I mean, there's still no marketplaces like for brands to connect with LinkedIn influencers, but it's a business to business platform. So all of the C-suite executives, if you're selling to, if you're selling to enterprise level, they're all, they're only hanging out on LinkedIn. That's where they're spending all their time. It's where they're making decisions. The 40% of the members have a take home over 70 something thousand Australian dollars a year. Like, so they're all higher, you know, much higher income bracket. So, you know, obviously business to consumer, like if you're selling t-shirts, you're in a rock band, Instagram's going to work better for you. But if you're in business to business, it's really is LinkedIn.
In saying that though, from what I can tell, video and photos in LinkedIn are really coming into play now. You know, there's some overwhelming statistics to suggest that if you're sharing a photo, you're doing a video, or you're recording a live, like, I'm assuming the algorithm, it's such a cliche word in LinkedIn, is evolving, you know, and probably chasing down more known and bigger social media platforms. So, I mean, from a visibility point of view, sharing photos and video on lives on LinkedIn seems to be the way that, that things are moving. Can you kind of shed any light on that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of updates to the algorithm in the last year. So engagement is important, very similar to Instagram, but the LinkedIn's also starting to take into account dwell time, which, you know, Facebook does. So the longer somebody spends looking at your content or your caption, the better it'll do. So obviously that means that all of a sudden, maybe the 30-second videos aren't as good as the 7-minute videos, if they could hold your attention, you know?
Yep, all relative. In terms of hashtags on LinkedIn as well, it's something I don't know a lot about. If I'm doing the hashtag, I think you can you tag a location now?
Well, you can't, you could use like a normal hashtag with a location. So it's just, it's not different like it is on Instagram, for example. Yeah, so hashtags just tell LinkedIn how to categorize your content, really. I mean, it can figure it out on its own. You're just helping it work it out. Like, there's
so
a lot of people
make or break.
No, I don't always do it, to be honest. Like, I don't find it brings in a huge amount of traffic, and if it does, it's normally quite low quality. But saying that, I don't do it on Instagram either, because I'm more interested in my existing network than I am people, you know, scrolling through just different hashtags.
Is LinkedIn measuring your activity at the moment? So if you're not logging in for a week, you're not commenting, engaging on other people's posts, you're not posting relevant content yourself, how serious is that? Like, what what are we going to work towards here to really grow a LinkedIn profile, aside from, you know, finding those useful mutual connections?
Yeah, so I mean, LinkedIn wants you to be active. So it's going to be finding ways to encourage you to be trying to show you relevant content. If you do post and you've never posted before, you'll get way more reach because it's trying to encourage you to to be on there. Like I think with anything in social media or even in Google with SEO, like the goal is you should align your objectives with the platform. So, you know, like on Google, you know, if you try and do the black hat techniques, it might work for a little while and then, you know, long term, the algorithm will outsmart you. Same with LinkedIn. Every Friday at 10 a.m. in California, all the product managers meet and their goal is to give the users a better experience. And so I just think of how can I create content that gives my audience a better experience? And then in the long term, that always seems to serve me well. Because there's a lot of people, there's still a lot of people gaming the algorithm on LinkedIn. There's you know, LinkedIn engagement pods are really popular at the moment.
Yeah. So in terms of, would you say that quality really trumps quantity still, or would you say maybe a blend of both, just having a really good source of quality content, or, you know?
I think quality is huge, but I mean, you know, I'm working in trust-based industries, you know, business to business, C-suite level, financial services, very much about building trust. And, you know, obviously trust is at all-time lows at the moment. And then, but I think the volume is important, not because you're getting your message in front of clients all the time, but just because you get so much market feedback that you improve your content so quickly, because you're constantly seeing what's working and what's not. I think that makes a big difference. Yeah.
How do you think LinkedIn compares to Facebook and Instagram organically in terms of generating leads in the small to medium, in particular the small to medium business space?
I just think I don't even think you can compare the two. I mean, in the industries that we work in, like LinkedIn, you can literally do an organic post and bring in hundreds of leads. Whereas Instagram, I mean. You know, I've got just as many followers on Instagram as I do on LinkedIn. But, you know, if I get a couple leads in a day, that's good, but they're not generally very good quality. So it depends on the business. Yeah. Like I've got an outsourcing client, a client that finds VAs in the Philippines, and they do really well on Instagram. So, you know,
It's relative, isn't it?
The numbers don't lie. You just got to work out what works.
No, they certainly don't. And you can very easily find some statistics on LinkedIn. Do you think that's got something to do with the fact that it's a younger platform, or it's only just starting to gain popularity? Do you think it's going through a phase that, you know, the people are using it now versus in 3 years' time? Do you think now's the opportunity, or do you think this platform is always going to kind of weed out the bullshit in terms of what type of businesses people are targeting? You know, like are they evolving as more people come in, or is the opportunity diminishing?
It's a really good question. I think that, you know, LinkedIn was created as a recruitment platform. So, you know, they've never anticipated that these salespeople and marketers would be using it so heavily. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that in a year or two, it's going to be as easy to connect with people that we don't know, because at the moment you can literally grow your audience and that's your social database. In my opinion, it's way more valuable than an email database, because apparently 40% of emails are changed by the end of the year, whereas of course on social media, like, it doesn't change just because the email address is different. You can always reach those people if you know what you're doing. It depends. At the moment, LinkedIn looks like it's going to continue giving people organic reach because it seems to be working for the platform. Facebook, I don't get much organic reach on Facebook. I've heard that some people do, but I think it's a great advertising platform, but it seems really to be losing a lot of people, businesses that were posting organically on Facebook, and they seem to be moving over to LinkedIn.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. So it seems to be like the pretty much the perfect business to business marketing platform, as far as I can tell.
If you're like selling, if you're selling like enterprise level software and you deal specifically with the IT director in an organization, there's nowhere else where you can go directly to that individual and say, hey, you know, let's have a conversation. I suppose
if you've got a tidy profile, then you're interacting with the mutual connections, you're posting relevant content on the other side as well, it's also going to increase the likelihood of that person engaging with you. I mean, if you send them an email, it might be a little bit harder. They might have to go outside of the platform to find your digital footprint or proof of who you are and what you actually do. And if they're on a mobile device, the likelihood of them actually doing that research before they get interrupted is probably quite low, right? You go.
I was just going to say, it does very much come down to your profile. And this is why, sending those sales letters can work against you, because if you push the information on people, then they don't really, if they click on your name and read your profile, that's an inbound activity. They've asked for the information, they're more likely to read it. So when I send people messages, I very rarely say anything about myself. I never say, hi, I'm Nathaniel from Bibby Consulting, I do this. I just make it all about them. Maybe they'll be curious enough to click on my name, and then obviously my profile's has all that social proof on it, blah, blah, blah.
Because at the end of the day, no one really buys from a desperate salesman, do they?
No. And also people don't buy things because a salesperson gives them a copy of their CV. And a lot of salespeople have a version of their resume on LinkedIn. It's got to be the biggest mistake that they don't think about.
Oh, right. Interesting. Yeah, right. As far as recommendations goes on the platform, again, I think endorsements, am I right in saying, is just a form of liquid gold on there, really?
The endorsements with skills and so on?
Yeah, so I recommend Levi Saunders or Nathaniel.
I recommend ACB
for. Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think they're a little bit too far down the profile, to be honest. There are people, I always have to push my prospects to look at it. But I think it's great because it's such an authentic way to get a recommendation rather than having just a testimonial on your website. And you don't have to have many of them to stand out from the competition because most people don't bother getting them. And if they do, they don't get, they don't get relevant ones, which, are similar to the target audience. They've been great for me. Yeah, makes a huge difference.
Oh, fantastic. The other thing I just randomly thought as well, there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that start something and move on to the next thing. They really cherish the euphoric side of starting a new business. And I think there's been a few occasions over the years where many years ago I've done the same thing. And they're probably targeting an audience, relative to one business that they're trying to promote. Do you think if they put everything that they're up to right now in bells and lights, if the less important things, do you think that can work against them a little bit, to be seen as too busy or not focused on the one thing?
I think it all comes down to how it's framed. I think it can be done well. I think it can be done poorly. Mm-hmm. If somebody is doing four or five different things, there's something that makes them similar, or there's a reason why they're doing all four of them. And you just might have to go really high level to a point where, it's like I'm passionate about helping businesses transform helping business leaders transform their lives. And these are my businesses. Bang, bang, bang. Because if you look at Richard Branson, he's got 400 companies and, so he doesn't look like he's confused. It's just a matter of how you position it.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, I always kind of thought when I optimize my profile, there's a few different ventures that I'm organized in. And I think I can guess from what you're saying, I'm probably better off saying, look, I'm, head over heels for organic search on engine optimization. And as a result, I've been lucky enough to be a part of not only Digital Hitmen, but these other things as well.
Absolutely.
Maybe changing the way that I think about it. And I think one thing to notice, I don't know how you say this in a non kind of bad way, but sometimes there seems to be a little bit of dick pulling going on in LinkedIn. And what I mean by that is, people purposely and always kind of patting each other on the back to get exposure. Do you think there's anything people have got to be careful of there?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about with the engagement pod. I like that dick analogy. Look, at the end of the day, if somebody engages on your content, it's because you've added value. Now, if you're adding value by engaging on their content instead of actually through your content, it's not going to have any impact on your potential client. You're not going to learn what your potential customer wants. So, like, I do think that you should engage with other people's content that are in your audience. And I think, you know, you should respond to engagement and so on. But if you're just doing it to try and get some love back, it's a waste of time. It's a complete waste of time. Yeah. It's a little bit like if you're having a restaurant launch, right? You're opening a restaurant and you go to 50 other people that are opening restaurants in the year and you say, you guys come to my launch and I'll go to your launch. Like, what's the point? You know, there's no customers.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think profile pictures is something that's incredibly important, like in terms of how you portray yourself?
Yeah, it is really important. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the first thing that people would look at, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. There's no concrete rules, I suppose, in terms of what your headline or what your story should be. But are you kind of all for telling stories on people's profiles or just presenting the facts?
I think just like if you're using it to get customers, Marshall, sorry.
That's all right.
He's like, as soon as I get on a podcast or something or a meeting, he's just like, won't leave me alone.
That's crazy. Awesome.
So look, I think if you're using it to get customers, you've got to think of it, you know, like it taking the customer through the journey. So if you're reaching out to somebody or they've read your content and then they've clicked on your profile, like you've got to think about the mindset that they're in and what's going to relate to them. And then you take them through that journey of you know, identifying the problem, talking about what you do, creating some curiosity, and then advising them what to do next. So storytelling, I think, you know, is a fantastic thing to do through content. I think it's really good to capture people's attention. But I think on the profile, by the time people are getting to your profile, they're a little bit further down and they want to know what you do and why and very quickly. So I think it should be straight to the point. And, you know, with some of those, if you're reaching out to like CEOs of ASX-listed companies, it's a good idea to make sure your profile looks very similar to theirs. So if they just got like director and then the company name, like you should have the same because you want to be at the same level as them, right? Like you don't want to have all your keywords stuffed in the headline because you just look like you come across as a salesperson or somebody that's not on the same level. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting, actually. I just noticed something here. It's saying here, get credit for your thought leadership with publications. So I don't know anything about publications on LinkedIn. I don't know whether it's a common thing or whatever. I just saw it listed here. Is there anything to keep in mind in relation to, it just says the publication section is one of the most underused element of LinkedIn profiles. Is that something that you use or?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's, you've got to put quite a lot of work into these articles on a LinkedIn publisher platform, but you know, you can definitely go viral relatively easily. So it's about having a strategy. So you're not just, you know, spending 2 days writing an article, then you're spending a day doing a video. You've got to think about like, how do I batch create content? So I've got the article that turns into 20 videos, that turns into 30 images. And by being systematic about it and efficient about it, you can create a lot of good quality content that reinforces the message again and again. But I've had a huge amount of success with those articles. Some of them have got, you know, 300,000 views, you know.
Wow.
That's pretty recent. Yeah.
Do you think those articles can cross-pollinate with the blog really effectively or?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always put the preference on LinkedIn itself just because that's where people can engage and stuff. You know, but then again, my industry is not very competitive for SEO, so you know, I haven't felt the need to. But Richard Branson, most followed guy on LinkedIn, and he drives traffic off to his blog. You get halfway through the article and then there's a link to his blog.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know that you could interlink like that on a post in LinkedIn. Very interesting.
He captures them in with the storytelling and then you have to click to read the rest.
Very interesting. Because I think Facebook and Google, you know, if you're linking outside the platform, they reduce your reach. Is that something that LinkedIn does?
Not so much on articles.
Yeah, cool. Good to
know. Reference stuff. Yeah, so that's great. I get a lot of traffic to YouTube through articles as well by featuring the videos in there. Yeah.
Very interesting. As far as sharing other people's content as well, you know, with mutual connections and pages and all that kind of stuff, if you find something valuable elsewhere, it's pretty valuable to share someone else's stuff, right?
It doesn't get much reach when you share stuff on LinkedIn. So, it's more valuable to comment on someone's stuff. And I think the goal should be to post your own content. It doesn't have to be, Marshall, it doesn't have to be like your own image or video. you could post Tony Robbins' quote, but you post it, you're not sharing it from his page, for example. It just shows that you want to, I think, especially if you're a business owner, you want to come across as somebody that, you know, has his own ideas and you know, doesn't just share other people's
thoughts. It's actually it's one of the golden rules in linking out with SEO blogging is that, you know, if you're sorting a site of information, you know, is that information that you're sharing, is that someone else that's related to your industry, and you're basically telling your followers, I guess, on LinkedIn that their information is better than yours, kind of thing? Or is it, you know, maybe you're citing an external source that goes over rules and regulations, but it sounds like you should be doing that within your articles and posts instead.
Yeah, I mean, like you can do it. I mean, it works better on other platforms, to be honest, like Twitter and stuff. But if you are going to do it, whatever platform you're on, just share your two cents, like share, you know, why you're sharing it.
Mm.
But at least add a statement and say, you know, I thought this was really valuable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it is a competitor.
Do you think long form content on LinkedIn is, I think it's touching on what we're speaking on before, but I suppose I can almost answer the question myself. I mean, long form content is going to be extremely valuable, maybe if it's hitting a couple of pillars. So you've got a photo, you've got a video in there as well. And the information that you're giving is actually valuable. You know, it's not necessarily just about your opinion, but it's the things that people need to know as well. Yeah. Is there anything more you want to say about long form, like versus, you know?
If you give somebody a lot of value in a long form piece of content, and they get to the end of it, and you just say, "Please comment below," you've kind of done them an injustice because they've just got all this value, and they're like, you know, they want more from you. So this is a great place where you can put like a link to a lead magnet, and that's where you can drive people into your email funnel. So every time I put a lead magnet on at the end of a long form piece of content, there will be between 100 to 200 people added to my email list because they get to the end, they've got so much value, they'll click off and fill out a form.
Mm. Yeah. What does a lead magnet look like in LinkedIn?
Well,
so when do you have the license to produce it, and how does it look?
Well, like a lead magnet might be like a LinkedIn message templates, for example, and it's a PDF document. And if I write an article that's about prospecting, and at the end I have this nice graphic that says, "Oh, by the way, if you'd like a copy of my ebook, click here." They go off to a landing page, fill out the form, and then, you know, they get sent the ebook, which, you know, has to be valuable, but then you've got an extra 100 or 200 or whatever, however many people in your database, which, you know, if you then have the nurturing system to follow those guys up effectively, you're just moving them further down the customer journey.
One thing we haven't talked about in lead generation in LinkedIn, I thought we'd better mention, you're not just pro organic, are you? I mean, there's people that are advocates for paid social media and that's all they do. There's people like me that are just pure SEO and web design and, you know, slowly doing other things, but that's my bread and butter kind of thing. But you're not necessarily just organic LinkedIn, are they? Do you see a lot of value in paid LinkedIn at the moment? Where's that all at?
Well, the way I look at it is we're not going to be able to post stuff online and have it reach all of the people in our target audience for free for much longer. This is just a gap, you know, as we transition. It's always going to end up being a paid game. Like, you can't get too comfortable with it being free. We're really lucky at the moment, but at the same time, you know, I do think that you can get a lot of organic reach for free. What I like to do is use them both in conjunction with each other. I think the LinkedIn ad platform still not quite where I want it to be, but I, through that lead magnet strategy that I was talking about, I actually remarket to those people on Facebook. So all of a sudden I've got them on email, LinkedIn and Facebook. So I think paid's great because it's scalable. You know, paid's fantastic. I think that'll be the next stage for LinkedIn. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like it's going to go through a stage where, and I think Instagram and Facebook are still going through that stage where, you know, people are really, or they have on Facebook, you know, everyone knows how to pay to play in those platforms. But LinkedIn, you know, they're still developing the payment game or whatever. I think there's a huge opportunity to get a good ROI, especially as LinkedIn gets better.
While you can connect with people that, you know, they're in your secondary degree network for free, like I just think that's where you should be focused. Like if they change it next year, so you have to pay to connect with people or something like that, you know, but in this next 12 months, if you built up 5,000 or 10,000 connections in your ideal target audience, that's going to serve you really well for the lifetime of your career.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think with the paid advertising and everything, I think we're at the first stage of opportunity now where, you know, you're still capitalizing organic and making the most out of that. Second stage is obviously going to be trying to capitalize on the paid side of things. And then I think stage three is it's going to be harder when the media platforms and, you know, money gets pulled out of conventional areas like TV and radio advertising, which it is at the moment. It's been, you know, going to be driving the price of Facebook and Instagram and Google Ads. And do you think LinkedIn will probably go the same way in terms of getting a bit of bang for your buck being a small business owner?
Yeah. And the way that the ad platforms work on social media, like if your content is good enough to get organic reach, you just get, if the ads are just going to be cheaper for you because you're going to reach more people with the same amount of, you know, for less spend. So it's always going to work. It's always going to work in your favor to learn what people engage with and learn what good quality content looks like. Because I expect that all those guys that are spending a fortune on our TV ads, it's going to take them a while to figure out what works. At the start, they're probably just going to throw TV ads on social media and it's not going to get any engagement, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So the time is now.
Yeah, I think we've got a huge opportunity. It's been like this for a few years, but I mean, it's still there. Every time I post on LinkedIn, I think to myself, one day that post will cost $500 or $1,000, you know?
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of truth to that, Nat, to be honest. I think one positive from now compared to 2 years ago, you know, the opportunity to grow organically still exists. Yeah. And the database of people has become more mainstream on LinkedIn than what it was 2 years ago. So I think it's almost like the perfect storm, you know, like more people are trying to do the same thing, but at the same time, there's also more people trying to do the same thing as well, which can kind of help each other out if you find the right people to help you do that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people, like we're talking about lead generation, there's a lot of people trying to do it, but 90% of them are not doing it properly at all. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just blasting messages at people and it doesn't work. So when you do it differently with integrity, it cuts through the noise. I mean, it's interesting, like the campaigns are working just as effective now, if not more so, than they were 10 years ago when no one else was using LinkedIn for lead generation.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And I suppose we have missed one point, and that's at the very start as well. You know, when people are prospecting on LinkedIn as well, I think you've really got to remove something I've learned. You've really got to remove your own ego, because there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they're so in love with their own product or what they do, or, you know, maybe their commission kind of really ask. I think people have really got to ask, you know, what's your motive for prospecting people on LinkedIn? You know, is it because you want it, you know, that there's a big commission attached to this solar product, for example, but you know that down the road sells a better product for a less price. You know, I think when you come from a point of being able to provide value, but also knowing that what you are offering is better than anything else that you can find 100%. In your marketplace, I think there's no if, buts or maybes in terms of how you're going to reach connections, performing, you know, have engagement, get referred and you know, potentially get client meetings from LinkedIn. I think people, if they don't focus on their product, like if their product is not good, they might blame, if their ego is not intact, they're going to blame everything else, like whether it's the reach on LinkedIn or, you know, all these other things, or no, LinkedIn's not the platform for me or whatever. The reality is that LinkedIn works.
You've got to fall in love with your customer, not your product. You know, if they don't, you got to find out what it is that they are interested in, what their needs are. The product can change. It may just be that they think it's something that it's not, but the key to business is getting customers. It's not about anything else. Mm. And they're there on LinkedIn. You just got to approach them the right way.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, and I do the same thing with my customers. I just had a meeting with a guy the other day, and he's just so busy. Like, I know it's just an absolute dreamboat for SEO, right?
Yeah.
And he's so run off his feet, but he's so appreciative that I came and saw him, and he's so passionate about, you know, parts of his industry that he's doing, whatever else. You know, the big thing for him is definitely not the price factor. It was the ingenuity of the way that I could craft an SEO contract where I could make it fit in with his time schedule and also spit out accurate information as well. So I think with you, with your product offerings on LinkedIn, you know, one of the first things that you asked me as a service provider, a different service provider is, you know, like where are you at in the business? You know, how much time do you have to do these things? And, you know, just you're wanting to know where your products, whether it's a course or whether it's mentoring or a training or, you know, taking some of the weight off my shoulders, you know, you're wanting to know where you fit in. And I think if people spent more time learning where they fit in, or learning where their customers fit into their product, and if they can't find that point where they actually fit in, you know, if they can't bridge that time gap, they can't meet that price gap of where their budget is, or you know, that they're not aligned with the same things, then it might be time to move on.
Absolutely. It's very much like it's about sales psychology and marketing, you know, combined. Like a lot of this stuff is really the consultative sell. You know, having that mentality, like you can't assume that you know, the reasons why your customer might be interested in buying until you ask them, find out. And even if you know the answer, you've got to get them to say it. So if you talk to them and tell them what they believe, they're just going to think, you know, you're a liar. You got to draw it out of them. You got to get them to say it. Yeah.
So, I mean, being an authority with information is something that you've done very well.
Thank you.
Also perhaps results in terms of, you know, clients that you might've had or whatever else, you know, it's obvious that there's some great stats for you. Do you spend much time, presenting kind of, you know, what that means to them and how it makes these guys feel like, you know, this lady generated this from LinkedIn and got these clients. Do you spend much time in that realm, or are you more kind of results focused? Cause this is something that we're working on at the moment. We, you know, the results is more often than not an easy sell with SEO, but also one thing that a few clients have told me is, you know, like when I've gone and saw them for Christmas breakup and everything like that, you know, it's what it did in their personal lives that really kind of gobsmacked me. I was like, wow, shit, this has really changed your life.
Yeah.
So where do you do you think there's a bit of that's important, you know, show how it changes people, or where are you just purely results focused?
Yeah, it's really good. Like I think I would like, because I get heaps of these messages like every day, you know, I get messages from people that have had some sort of benefit even just from consuming content. I don't always share that with everybody. I think that it's pretty obvious, you know, from the engagement I get, you know, in the community that like I'm having this sort of impact. I love getting like obviously these video testimonials of people that have, and you're right, like it just transforms their lives because they go from a place where they like have no certainty in the direction of their business and all of a sudden they can, you know, scale or grow with confidence. But to be honest, I just focus on doing a really good job and I let people it seems to be working because I get lots of leads, but I get the top quality leads and they're never like when I first started, they used to be like, okay, we're getting three quotes and you're one of them and let's just see where you end up. Whereas now it's like, they're like, we've been watching your stuff for 2 years. We would like you to come in and train our team. Can we get a proposal? They're not speaking to anyone else. So it's, I feel like we've done that positioning. And if somebody comes through a website and they don't know who I am, like they haven't seen my content, I'm like, oh God, you know, it's going to be, yeah. I don't want to sit there and justify it all. I sort of want to get them in the funnel so they do watch some of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that, Nat, and probably maybe not in the same extreme through social media channels, but we get the same thing through referrals. You know, people are not just ringing up for marketing anymore. They're ringing up for SEO. They're ringing up for the stuff that we want, which is our bread and butter. And I think that's come from, you know, obviously good experiences from customers, but also a little bit of positioning ourselves as well, you know. And it's just so great. Like, you know, if anyone's kind of followed any part of our digital footprint or whatever, it's almost like you go to work on your future clients for the next 2 years. And when they're ready, they pick up the phone and call you.
Yeah.
We've already given them some sort of value or whatever else. So.
Yeah.
The compound effect in every way.
It's a bit tricky to measure, but I think like I've definitely been doing it long enough to know that it's working. And I think the good thing with the content side of things is not many businesses do it very well. So you just eliminate a lot of the competition.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, we might wrap it up there. There's heaps of stuff that I'll be able to ham up for the copywriter to have a go at. So I'm going to transcribe the best information. We'll get something up. It's going to be completely original as well. So, you know, there's a few, most of the questions I had, like, were just kind of off the top of my head. And it's probably going to serve us well because sometimes when you don't have a lot of time to prepare, you know, you hit some interesting points that other people don't hit. So, I think we'll come up with something really good out of that.
Hey, my web developer, he reckons the website's going to be finished today. He was asking for my old website credentials so he could transfer the blogs over. I was just thinking, like, is that a good idea? Given that those blogs were written in the right way, like, isn't that just going to, like, shouldn't I start fresh?
Without looking at them, I can't comment. I mean, how many words per blog was it?
They're not good. I don't think it's a good idea at all. I think we should start following best practice.
Is it less than 500 words per blog?
It's just a mixed bag. Some of the images don't work. There's no links to other pages. It's just a mess. I think it's bad way to start.
It'd be a per blog basis. So yeah. I would collate the maybe. How many blogs do you do, first of all?
I don't know. Probably 100 or something. I don't know. Okay, I didn't write all of them. I've outsourced some to this, you know. I mean, I think I could use them to create some new blogs, but I think, you know, we should work out, first of all, like what do we want blogs about? How long should they be? How many links do they need in them? How do we structure the images?
Yeah, one sure way to fuck it up is if he brought all over the blogs right and he didn't date them back. So he's like, all of a sudden they're all posted till yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, in each blog, there's going to be links and stuff. No, as you're right, some won't have any heading or formatting or whatever else. So the best thing to do.
The whole reason I wanted a new website was to start fresh and do it right from day one, I think.
If you wouldn't mind, just send me an email about that, just with your old domain. So are you updating it with a new domain?
I want to keep the old one up for the time being, I think, if that's okay.
Is it a .com or a .com.au?
So the old one's a .au and the new one's a .com.
Yeah.
So it's Bibby Consulting Group, the old one, and NathanielBibby.com is the new one. So it's a personal brand. It's not really cross-stepping on the toes, is it?
Yeah. I mean, the .com.au is going to have some sort of foothold in the traffic.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind, just email them through to me so I can have a look at these blogs because I can actually put up a sheet and I can see what you're ranking for with any of those topics. So some might be worth bringing over. But the other thing you got to be careful of if you're using your old domain and you're deleting blog posts as well.
Good content.
Well, if you just delete them and you shoot them out of the sky and you don't redirect each one of those URLs, like you can't just delete pages when you relaunch. Like you've got to delete them and redirect them. So when people still Google and find that old URL that doesn't exist anymore, they still go somewhere. It's not a dead end.
I don't understand why we delete them. Just leave them on the old site and create new content on the new one, I would have thought. It's just...
So yeah, you're going to leave the .com.au where it is, and you're launching the .com now.
Yeah. Is there any downside to doing that?
Look, I'd be a bit reluctant to bring the old blog post over. I just think you've got enough going on as it is. A lot of these old blog posts aren't going to be very good. And to be honest, like ones that are over a year old aren't really truly relevant anymore because they're old for a start, and Google likes fresh content. And the other side of it is it's probably not formatted in the right way anyway. So I reckon you start the .com with a fresh one, leave the old blog post where you are. I think you're going to have issues if you transfer over with the domains because Google's going to get really, really fucking confused really quickly. I think
I've had the website for 10 years or something, and I just want to keep it there and build something new that's, you know, will slowly get to the top. I mean, I think it won't take long. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think you're heading in the right direction with the new website. Relaunch on the .com, keep the .com.au. I think keep the blog post separate for now. And it's certainly something I'd just run over, just do a double take with Brad and just make sure that that is the best strategy. But it's good that you're not too precious with your content, because sometimes repurposing old content is actually tougher than producing new content.
You should at least have the categories of content that you want on the new website before you start bringing blogs over. You don't just want to bring anything over.
No, well, that's one of the things that we work on in SEO campaign as well. So all your blogs need to be categorized, and each category page, a category could be just dedicated to engagement. So everything that falls within that category is talking about engagement or, you know, whatever that category is. And then
you have too many categories, or how many
Well, it's all relative to your blog posts. I mean, if you've got 20 different blog posts and you've got, you know, three really good categories where you feel everything falls into. For instance, I had a plan hire client the other day, and, you know, talking about there might have been a category for service and maintenance, new news and new products for the company. Safety was another one. But then we did one all about environmental waste on mine sites, and that blog post didn't really fit any of those categories. So we had to create a new category called environment something like chemicals in the environment or waste or whatever it was, so that blog had somewhere to go, basically. And each one of those categories, it's not just a category. Like, you don't just create a category, because as soon as you do that, you've created a super low content page, which Google hates. Like, when you create a category page, you've got to be, this category is all about all these different types of things, and it contains these blog posts, and this is why we do it, kind of thing. So when people click on that, they get all the blog posts and their topic, but they also get an explanation of what the category is itself. Yeah. So the categories slowly grow as your blog posting increases. You might start off with two. You might start off with no categories until you got five blog posts, and then you try and categorize them. It's not a make or break thing at the start. Between the categories and the author, you know, author bios are probably more important than categories, I reckon, to nail. Okay. And author bios are different to actual buyers on your website as well.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. Well, I'll have a chat to him and see where he's at with it, and hopefully
I would just email them through so I can have a look at these old blog posts and just see if anything's ranking or whatever. But if you're moving, you're going to have two separate websites, I just don't think transferring one blog post over here to over there is the ideal thing.
I think they want me to transfer the domain authority over, but I don't feel really comfortable doing that, to be honest.
It's a tough one, Nat. You know, if you do that and you point that old domain to the new one, like, I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah,
that used to be super valuable. Like, it was just a no-brainer. Like, if you went through a company rename, you'd just fucking do it. But at the same time, you know, you can still have two websites. It doesn't matter as much. Like, when you relaunch a new domain, like, first 6 months are so ordinary. Like, you'd be lucky to index for a handful of terms.
I've had the website for nathanielbibby.com has existed for about 5 years. It's just been a shit website, that's all.
Well, if you got that and it's been there for 5 years, you know, like it's not necessarily starting from scratch. Like Google doesn't see it as an adolescent domain. Yeah. There just might be some harmful stuff that's been there for a while that we'd have to reverse as well. But yeah, look, I think transferring the old blogs over, until I look at it, I just couldn't give you a definitive answer because I know that there's positives to doing it and there's negative. Like for instance, I had a Reiki healing still do client in Melbourne and she's like, oh, I love my blogs, they're my work, you know, and everything. And it was so poorly formatted, so low on content, so all over the shop in terms of, you know, switching between first person and third person and, you know, hugs and kisses and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's great. People respond to that on social media.
You got to tell them.
And then I'll get a bit like, yeah. And then I just went through every single one of them. And I said, look, you'd be lucky to get one user per month in all of these. And it's just killing your website. So we removed at least 30 of them. And I want to remove more because we don't have enough time to repurpose them. And if I can't repurpose all these blog posts and they've still got these shitty ones that are dragging it, you know, through the bottom of search engines because they're considered like a zombie page for the website. Yeah. You know, I could be up shit creek in terms of when she's expecting to get ranked. So I've really got to put the hard word on here and say, hey, we can't repurpose all of it. We can rewrite a lot of it, but we still got to get rid of these or de-index these because it's just going to do you no favour and no website users are looking at it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. Okay, mate. Well, leave it with me. I'll send over some info and thanks for doing that. Let me know.
No, pleasure.
Anything else from
No, that's right. I'll ham this up with the copywriter now and I'll be in touch with some information over the coming days as well. So once we get our shit together and I have a baby and everything else like that in between, we will be firing up the blog. So we'll do a professional, sorry, the podcast. So we'll do a professional job.
Have you had the baby yet or not?
No, any day now. Just expecting a call any day. So Lauren's pretty ready to pop by the looks of it, but in saying that though, who really knows?
I saw Brooke Velinovich for a coffee this morning and she was I was seeing you. Sorry?
Oh yeah. No, Brooke's awesome, hey. She's out there.
Yeah. Well she's four months in herself.
Oh well, how's she doing?
Yeah, she seems all right.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, she's
she says she's hanging for a drink, she said.
I reckon. And she's still gonna do this LinkedIn and Instagram thing.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'll try and come along to that. How long does it go for?
That'd be great. It's from 1 till 4 PM. We've got some drinks afterwards if you want to stick around, but don't have to.
Yeah, cool. Send that through. That'd be great.
Okay.
That'd be great. I'll probably take you up on that, provided that I'm not in a hospital. So, good luck.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Mate. No worries. All right, mate.
Thanks for that. And I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, buddy. Ciao.